The next topic that I'm going to give you to consider of what you can expect on a film project for the first time. And of course, this kind of depends on how many minutes of music you'll be composing and how big the video will be. But I mean, it's pretty consistent, excuse me, across the board, no matter how big the project may be. You want to make sure that or keep in mind that you want your music, the themes, the melodies, the structure of what you're composing to be balanced. You know, you want it to be balanced. You want it to have some consistency of the way it flows. You know, you want to think of it that way. Consider like the fact that the storyline for a film, you know, it's based on an actual story. You know, whether that story is fictional or non-fictional, there is a structure to the movie. There's a structure to the storyline. So they're not just getting on video and just creating anything. There's a thematic structure to it. There's a structure to the story. You know, there's certain things that are established at the beginning of the film, of the video. If we're talking about a movie, regardless as to the length of it, whether it's short or feature, or even if we're speaking of episodic or whatever. But let's just take something like Star Wars, right? If you're talking about the first Star Wars that came out in the 70s, right? You know, they didn't just start jumping into, you know, a lightsaber duel. They didn't just start fighting. You know, you didn't just, you know, in the first 2 minutes, you didn't just see Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader going at it. I mean, they had to set you up. They had to, like, you know, give you an overview and an understanding of the origins of certain things. You know, they built you up to understanding who the characters are and whether they're good or whether they're bad, whether they're for, you know, the dark side or not, whether or not they're, you know, helpers of the Jedi or whether they're a Jedi or something else. I mean, you know, certain things were established. It should be kind of the same way with your music. I mean, that's the way I kind of approach things. But I mean, that's something to keep in mind. And it certainly will help you as a composer for your first project. If you step back and just think for a minute, you know, how am I writing this music? This next cue that I'm about to work on, that I'm composing, what's the flow of it? I consider that a lot of times when I'm writing a score. Now, of course, I'm going to be composing according to whatever the spotting notes were that the director gave me. But I do want to have everything flow a particular way so that it's not the same monotonous sound. You know, it ebbs and flows and it has a direction to it. You don't want everything to have a monotone sound as if it's just one single piece of instrumentation that's just looped back and forth. You know, you don't want that. You know, you want to progressively start adding certain elements to certain cues that you write, you know, later, so that it seems like the score itself is progressing. The soundtrack is not just sitting on one melody. You know, it's evolving. That's what you want to do. You want to make sure that everything evolves and you want it to be balanced from beginning to end with whatever you're working on, so that, you know, the listener feels like they're on a journey, not just with what they visually see with the film, but also sonically with what they're hearing with the soundtrack that you've come up with. You know, if you put them on a journey with your music, it makes the movie experience, it makes the film experience that much more enjoyable for them. You know, imagine if, you know, you were watching something like Star Wars and there was no action music for the action scenes. You know, there was no upbeat music. There wasn't anything frantic. It was just the same old slow tempo adagio strings for, you know, 90% of the film. It wouldn't capture your interest because you would just be saying to yourself, you know, where is this going? Because it seems like the music isn't even flowing with what I see on the film, on the screen. So, you know, keep that in mind the same when you're composing. You know, there might be something that's maybe a little of a challenge or a little of a struggle when you're scoring for the first time for a project. But keep that in mind. Keep that in mind that you can, you know, you can have some influence as to how the music fits in and elevates the scene, you know, each individual scene and the film in its totality as a whole. So, you know, do that, you know, look at some type of thematic balance, musical balance with what you're doing. So it balances out with what was, what's on video that they're looking at. You know, you want that balance because it'll just make everything else seem that much more polished when you do that. Now, this next topic is something that all musicians, all composers, regardless as to what type of music they're composing and writing. In fact, I would say all artists in general eventually come to this point, and that is finding inspiration. You know, every artist, whether it's the culinary arts, you know, you're a sous chef or a chef, or, you know, whether you're a master of, you know, you love creating barbecue, or you love Italian food, or you're a pastry chef and you love doing certain cakes or pies or cupcakes, or, you know, you may be an artist, a painter that loves doing oil paint. You know, you like writing science fiction maybe or something. It's the same no matter what it is. You know, when you're an artist in some type of art, you're looking for inspiration. You're trying to find some inspiration to create something. It's no different when you're a composer. And certainly if you're working on your first independent film project, you're going to expect to have the daunting task of coming up with music. I mean, that's what you do as a composer. You come up with music. You compose music. You write music. You write new original music. That's the reason why the director came to you and agreed to put you on board with the project that you agreed to, because instead of them just, you know, licensing or buying some temp track, some temp music that they've used somewhere from a music library, which they can do, nothing wrong with that, but they also would like to have some originality. You know, that's one of the things about music libraries is that, of course, they're used, but because they're a library that people can license that song for, or that instrumentation for their own project, it also means that you're not the only one that can license that particular same piece of music as long as you're willing to pay for it. So, you know, the same music you use could be the same music that 50 other people used. I'm not saying that's wrong or that's bad. There's nothing wrong with that. People do it all the time. The directors came to you for original music because they want something that differentiates what they're working on and what they're going to put out from, you know, 100 other people. They want to be unique. They want to have a unique sound. They want to have something that's custom made. So it's incumbent upon you as a composer to come up with something original. And one of the things that you'll rack your brain with all the time is, man, is this melody that I'm working on right now that I just thought of, did somebody else write this already? You know, am I plagiarizing and not know it? Am I copying off of someone and not know it? So you're racking your brain wondering whether or not this sounds too much like some other musician or composer or artist. You know, what am I doing? There was a quote that was, I'm not really certain who was the originator of this quote, but it goes something like, good artists copy, but great artists steal. Now, I don't know. Some people say that was a composer that used that line, or the famous artist, painter Picasso said something like that. Not really certain who said it for certain, but good artists copy, but great artists steal. That's very relevant, because there's no one that doesn't pretty much look at or listen to their counterparts, their compadres, that have done it already and not get some inspiration from it. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, go out and just, you know, listen to a score by Hans Zimmer and just try to change one note or two and say that's your own score. You know, use some originality. But what I am saying is that there's absolutely nothing wrong with you listening to a film composer like my favorite film composer is Thomas Newman. Now, he's not the only one, but he's absolutely my favorite, along with Danny Elfman and Alan Silvestri. You know, I love Hans Zimmer as well, and a slew of other composers that are phenomenal composers out there. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with you listening to music by, you know, a famous composer, musician, whether it was somebody like a Miles Davis that does jazz, or if it was a Coltrane from back in the day, or Duke Ellington, or a classical composer such as Chopin or Tchaikovsky or Mendelssohn, or, you know, Rachmaninoff or Debussy or Brahms or Bach or, you know, Mozart, or, it could be Gershwin. It could be, you know, someone in more modern times, you know, like Daft Punk, whoever it is. It's nothing wrong with you listening to see how other people have approached certain music. You can get inspiration from anywhere. You know, don't copy, but I mean, to some degree, after a while, I mean, there are only so many chord progressions and thematic arrangements you can make before it's starting to sound similar to someone else to some degree, even though it may be your own original. I mean, you know, after a while, you know, everyone's going to use like the same, you know, like if you listen to classical music, I mean, you know, after a while, they all use the same arpeggiatura or the same type of, you know, melodic progression, or chordal progression or modulation. I mean, they're all borrowed. They're all, you know, they're all kind of the same. I mean, listen to some soundtracks, some film soundtracks, and tell me whether or not you've heard the same drums or percussion riffs over and over and over in every action scene in a film. You know, they're using the same taiko drums or toms or whatever it might be. And, you know, they're using the same rhythm from one film that they use to the next. So, you know, all artists borrow, all composers borrow, all composers listen to other composers and other musicians. I mean, it's obvious. Of course they're going to, because, you know, if you're a composer, if you're a musician, if you're a music producer, you studied your craft. And the only way you're going to study your craft is by listening to other music. And the only way you're going to be influenced by listening to other music is acknowledging that, you know, you have a favorite of those, a favorite, you know, composer or music producer or artist or whoever that writes the type of music that you favor, that you like, that appeals to you. So, of course, it's going to rub off on you in some way. You know, it'd be like somebody practicing with Bruce Lee for 15 years when he was alive. And then, you know, when they go to spar or fight with somebody, someone says, man, you fight like Bruce Lee. Well, yeah, obviously, of course, because they've trained with Bruce Lee for 15 years. What else are they going to look like? Where else are they going to get it from? That's where they emulate it, because that's where they learn from. So, I mean, if you listen to, you know, if you favor listening to Beethoven or Brahms all the time for the majority of your classical music, then it's going to rub off on you as a composer. But, you know, it's the same with anything else. You're going to find your inspiration from somewhere. And most of the time as a composer, You know, especially if you're first time composing, there's nothing wrong with you listening to other soundtracks. There's nothing wrong with you taking a film and looking at that particular scene and seeing how they scored that action scene, especially if you're working on a project and you're not quite comfortable or sure as to how you should, you know, properly score an action scene. Then, you know, look at another composer's methods as to how they scored a particular action scene. Listen to what they did in some film like The Bourne Identity or you know, Mission Impossible or whatever it is. Listen to how they scored that, you know, listen to how they scored that particular action scene in the Avengers Endgame or whatever it might be. You know, listen to it and take notes. You know, look at another scene if it calls for some dramatic score, if it calls for some dramatic arrangement, well then, you know, listen to, you know, certain scores and movies from certain composers and look at how they did something dramatic in that particular scene that was a tearjerker. You know, listen to like Luke and Leia, one of the most beautiful cues in my opinion that was ever written. That's still one of my favorite cues to this day. But, you know, listen to it and get an idea of how it was scored. Now, of course, John Williams sounds like John Williams. So I wouldn't necessarily encourage people to emulate everything as John Williams because there are not too many people that sound like him. He pretty much kind of has his own stylings in the way he does things. But, you know, there are plenty of examples out there. As well, for inspiration, just get out of the house. Just get out of the house. Get out of your room. Get out of the apartment. Just put the music down. Take your hands off of the MIDI controller. Take your hands off of your keyboard and mouse for your computer. And just go outside and walk. Just walk. You know, just get in the car and ride somewhere. Just walk. You know, especially if it's during, you know, the spring or summertime where it's warm outside. Just go outside and just listen, you know, don't talk to anybody, you know, unless you want to, you know, have someone along or whatever. But I mean, just go out and enjoy your surroundings and you'd be surprised what type of inspiration you get from just listening to the wind blowing or watching birds fly by or, you know, looking at the cars go by or just looking at people walking by you or the particular scenery you might be at from wherever you live. You know, you might be near a river or a lake or a stream, a pond. You know, a hiking trail where you have people riding their bikes on the trail or people just walking on the trail or, you know, just looking at the sky. I mean, there's so many different things that can give you inspiration, you know, watching another movie, just stopping what you're doing and just watching a little bit of something else. You know, you'd be surprised how many ideas you get from just doing those different things. That can help you find inspiration for composing a theme for your film, especially the first time, as a composer, for, you know, your first independent film project or your first film project in general. You know, use all those different options for finding inspiration for yourself. The next topic that I want to get into will have to do with something that you, yeah, you know, it is so very important. This topic that I'm going to be speaking to you about that I'll be mentioning. This is something that's, of course, going to develop into a habit for you, a good habit, but it is an essential habit that you have to take seriously. And that is to save often and to back up. Save often and back up. Using your digital audio workstation, meaning using your computer or whatever you use for composing, save whatever you're working on often. Get into the habit of saving. I do it all the time. I mean, on Windows, it's Control S. On Mac, it's the Option S. And I'll do that probably like after every, you know, sequence I record, after every MIDI sequence I record from my controller, whatever the line is. I mean, I'll just, out of habit, I'll just hit Control S in Windows 10 on my DAW, in my DAW. That's just what I do. You know, at least maybe after every 2, 3, 4 recordings at the most, I just do it as a habit. Because you never know what weird thing can happen that's not your fault. It's just one of those things where something weird could happen. It could be a new plugin that you're using, or you just maybe updated or upgraded, and now all of a sudden it just hangs, and your project, your DAW that you're using just hangs. It doesn't respond, and it crashes, or your operating system crashes, or which I'll have to say, and this isn't a Mac versus PC debate, but I don't really get crashes with Windows 10. I mean, Windows 10 is extremely stable. It works very well. I'm, you know, very happy with it. So I don't have problems with that. Now, I've had maybe one or two apps or plugins that didn't sit well with my DAW, and it made my DAW like hang up and maybe crash. I haven't really had any crashes, but hang ups. I've had that happen once or twice with certain plugins that I might have updated, and I thought it would work a certain way and it didn't. But I would go into Task Manager and I would find my DAW, and then I would just end that task. I'd stop it. And then it would just take me back to the Windows desktop again, because it closed out Studio One Pro that I use for doing all my music. And then, you know, I could just open it again. But once I open Studio One Pro again, if something tragic like that happened, if something unfortunate happened where in the middle of me scoring, working on some music, it locked up or it crashed, before that particular step, I had already, you know, selected Control S to save my project at that particular point in my project, then when I restart my DAW, it pretty much is going to start from where I left off at. But if I never selected Control S, you know, if it was maybe 10 minutes that went by before I even thought about saving it, then I could have potentially lost 10 minutes worth of work. Normally, I would think with most DAWs nowadays, with most digital audio workstations nowadays, there's an autosave feature that's implemented in the background. So whether you select Control S or Option S or not in your project, the digital audio workstation software that you're using will automatically save what you're working on without you having to remind it or do anything or forcing it to. Which I think mine is set for autosave. I just never really checked. I'm pretty sure it is. It's kind of irrelevant to me because, as I said, over the years, I just got into the habit of always pressing the Control key and the S key at the same time to automatically save at whatever point I'm working on with my music in my DAW, you know? So I don't have to worry about it being saved and updated. Once you've saved whatever you worked on and you finish doing whatever you've done and you finish the project, back it up. Make a backup. Once you've made the backup, then you test the backup. Always keep this in mind. As someone who's worked and done IT work for years professionally in corporate America, a backup is not a backup until it's tested. Don't just assume because you made a backup that it's a legitimate backup. Anything can happen to a file unexpectedly where it becomes corrupt. Something could happen where, you know, it didn't save properly. Test your backup. Once you've tested your backup and you know it's legitimate, you know, if it's a 2-track stereo file that you've bounced down from your entire project, that's maybe 30 minutes worth of music in a WAV file, and, you know, back it up and move it to somewhere like a, you know, Google Drive or something, whatever, or and it could be an external hard drive that you have. Once you've moved it on there, at some other time, you know, on your computer, see if you can open up that file that you've backed up on your computer. If you can do that and everything, you know, performs as it's supposed to with that file, then it's a legitimate backup. Until you test it, it's not a legitimate backup. But you absolutely want to back up whatever you're working on, because you never know when you could inadvertently or accidentally lose something and not be able to get it again. And I can absolutely guarantee you there will be that one incident where something unexpected happens and you lose your data for whatever reason. And you were telling yourself and reminding yourself the day before or a week before, I need to back this up. And you just keep procrastinating, saying, I'll get to it. I'll get to it. That's what everyone does. It's happened to me. I'm just telling you because it's happened to me. This is the reason why I can tell you. It will always happen at the wrong time when you have the greatest intentions to back up something and you never do, and something happens where you accidentally lose it somehow, and now you don't have it anymore. And that's one of the worst feelings, that you've put hours or maybe days into something and you can't reproduce it and you don't have it at your fingertips anymore because you don't have a backup of it, and it's gone. It's just like all that work or whatever you've had, it's not there anymore. It's just like you didn't even do it, because you don't have a copy of it anywhere. You don't have a backup. So that's very essential. Make certain you have a backup. More than one backup. Make a copy of your backup. Once you've determined that your backup is legitimate, that your backup is good, the integrity of it is sound, then make a copy of your backup and back that up in another place as well. Have more than one backup, not just one. But, you know, first of all, have at least a backup. And then once you have one backup, have a copy of your backup somewhere else also, as a matter of redundancy. There's no such thing as, you know, too many copies. You know, make as many as you need. You want to be as redundant as possible. You know, this is your work of art that you've worked on. So don't be afraid of doing that. I know certainly whenever I am working on a film project, a new project, a new film or whatever it might be, I will make a copy of the entire project. You know, I do everything in Studio One Pro, so I will make a copy of the entire folder where that new project is located on my hard drive. And I'll copy that folder and back it up somewhere else. So just in case something happens unexpectedly, I could always copy that backed up folder of that project back into the new hard drive or whatever it is. And as long as the same program, Studio One Pro, that I'm using is working, it will be able to read the backed up folder and its content, you know, as well as the bounce audio files that I bounce down. So save your work often. And after you've saved everything, make backups. Have a backup of everything that you work on. It will certainly save you at the most critical and crucial time, unexpected. The last point, the last topic for this episode of this particular episode of the spotting session. And again, the original question for this episode that is put out there is, you know, giving you points about your first independent film project and what can you expect as a film composer scoring it. So the last point of this to help you as to what you would expect is, of course, that you're going to have to get used to mixing it, what you've worked on, and bouncing it down. You mix it and you bounce it. Mix it, bounce it. So what's involved with mixing? Well, this is what I do. Now, this is not saying that everyone does the exact same across the board, but many people do. There are two schools of thought, and neither one is wrong. I feel like it's your personal preference, and some things just kind of help you know, with time anyway, especially if you have a deadline to make, depending on how much music you have to create and how often you have to put it out. But all of your, MIDI tracks that you're sequencing for your arrangement for that soundtrack as a composer, you know, they have to be mixed and sound cohesive together as one final arrangement and one final, you know, as one performance. So what I do with all of my MIDI tracks is I'll go to each MIDI track pertaining to that particular instrument, and I will bounce it down as a wave file. And I'll just go through all of them. So, you know, when I'm finishing with a score for a film, like some of the, you know, the projects I worked on, you know, let's say like some of the short films I've done or some of the stuff, I guess it was about a year ago or so. And I did something for Revolt TV that was on Revolt TV. And it was a short film, but I think the whole thing was like maybe, I don't remember, maybe 25 minutes, 27 minutes long, the film or something like that. Maybe a little over 30 minutes. I can't quite remember. But either way, what I did is, you know, for each scene, of course, you know, I composed, you know, whatever music I needed to compose, agreed to with the director for that film and what we had in our spotting session. And I bounced each particular track down as a wave file. And then, of course, I bounced that down to its particular folder, which I said, you know, I like to label, or I like to put all of my wave files that I'm going to use from the actual project, the arrangement project where I've sequenced all of the MIDI tracks. And I like to bounce down that audio file into its own folder. Now, I normally just call it STEMS, STEMS. And all a STEM is just, you know, like it's just an audio file. It's just a final combination of whatever audio file, excuse me, that you've created. Now, I mean, normally with stems, I mean, a lot of times when you deliver stems also, it has another different meaning where, you know, instead of you, like if someone wanted the stems, like the director or editor or whoever wanted the stems, then maybe they want to do their own mix. A lot of times you would just give them like the full, like a stem or a bounce down version of all of the different tracks combined of a particular group or ensemble of instruments. So a perfect example would be like if I'm doing an orchestral arrangement and I'm sequencing that, instead of me giving them like about, you know, 8-12 different string tracks for all of the different strings and, you know, for the violins, first and second violins, violas, celli, contrabass, and I'm giving them like 8, 9, 10 different wave files, I'll just mix all of the strings together as a string ensemble. And I'll just give them a 2-track stereo wave file of all of the strings playing together. And then for the brass, I'll just give them a 2-track stereo file of all the brass together instead of giving them each individual brass with, you know, trumpet, horns, trombones, or, you know, bass trombone or tuba or whatever it might be. You know, I'll just, you know, I could give them that. Now, but what I normally am saying for my own purposes of labeling and organization, I'll just call the folder stems, knowing that I'm bouncing down each individual instrument to its own wave file. So, you know, once the project is done, I could easily have 40 or 50 different audio files there. You know, it depends. I don't know. It could be 30, 40, something like that. And then, you know, I'll just take, excuse me, all of those audio files and I'll import them into a new project. And I'll just start mixing all of them accordingly. Now, of course, I don't really want to go over all the intricacies of mixing because that would be another episode, another topic I could get into that would be worthy of its own episode. But I definitely use certain things such as gain staging, proper gain staging, and, you know, other little things that I use consistently when I mix all the time when it comes to using certain processing, digital signal processing, whether we're talking about EQs or compressors or reverb or, you know, using automation and, you know, panning, things of that nature. All those are different techniques that go into a good mix, which is a, you know, maybe that's another episode I can look at. If people are interested enough, let me know. You know, I'll definitely do an episode on that, you know, just give you an idea of how I do things. But once it's all mixed, then you have to bounce it down. So what is bouncing a track? Well, bouncing down is the same way as, you know, you take everything as a final mix and you bounce it down or you mix it down into a two-track stereo wave file, an audio file. So all of the 30 or 40 audio tracks that I would have rendered individually from my sequence, I take all of those audio files and I mix them accordingly to a good soundtrack and I bounce that down as a stereo file. And that's what I would be presenting to the director, directress for the final project. You take that final bounce stereo file, which again, I would be delivering as a 24-bit 48 kilohertz final render, which is absolutely master quality, industry master quality, 24-bit 48 kilohertz. And, you know, I bounce it down and I give them that file and I send it to them, you know, over a file sharing service. And then they can download it whenever they need to. And however you want to work that out. If you want to send them, you know, like each individual cue as a wave file, you can do that. You know, you just want to make sure that you have a good mix. That's a good balanced mix. You don't want to compress it too heavily. And, you know, I try not to send my mixes too hot. You know, I'm not trying to like send them an album. I mean, like if I was putting out an album of my own, then I'm going to hit it with a limiter so that it's, you know, trying to get as close as possible to the dynamic range of zero without it distorting with digital distortion. Now, of course, now in this day and time, this is the year 2021, the standard that everyone is using now is I think it's called LUFS. I think it's pronounced LUFS or LUFS. I think it's LUFS. I'm not certain about that. LUFS. So we're using a musical measurement, audible or decibel measurement of the average listener volume in LUFS. So if I'm correct, I think pretty much kind of like the standard across the board is negative 14 LUFS. And you even have a lot of intelligent limiters and plugins now that measures things not in just RMS, but also in LUFS. So it'll detect where yours is at, or if it doesn't have auto detection, it will at least have the threshold there of the limit of when you're hitting or close to negative 14 LUFS. So you'll know whether or not it's loud enough or too loud. But I mean, normally when I'm giving mixes, you know, I'm just making certain that I have proper gain staging with my audio tracks and I mix them down. And I'll have something that might be like maybe, you know, 4, 6, 8 decibels away from negative 14 LUFS, but it's loud. It's a full arrangement. It sounds good, but it doesn't sound like it's just ear piercing loud. And, you know, I don't have it so that, you know, the woodwind sound just as loud as the drums. You know, that's one of the main things that I try to keep in mind when it comes to mixing soundtracks is I want to have some dynamics there, which is certainly going to be an episode that I'm going to talk about later in the near future about dynamics. You know, music has some dynamics. That's what makes music interesting, especially orchestral music. If you're doing any type of orchestral arrangements for your film scores, you certainly want to have dynamics there. And it's very easy to kind of circumvent having your music dynamic when you're dealing with sample libraries, because you can have a flute sounding as loud as a bass drum. In real life, that's impossible. It doesn't exist. It just doesn't work that way. But in a sample library, when you're dealing with digital audio, that's being played through a software sampler on your computer in your digital audio workstation, you could turn up the volume on your flute to make it sound just as loud as a drum ensemble. That's not realistic, but it's something you can do. But it's also something that you have to consider when you're, you know, when you're mixing and you want things to be balanced. So, you know, that's another topic I can delve into and, you know, more extensively when it comes to mixing. But one of the things that you're certainly going to have to get used to doing and what you're going to expect your first time is you're going to have to mix what you've worked on. You're going to have to mix your sequence. Now, what some other people will do, some composers, they'll just take their sequence and they'll just bounce down their MIDI sequence because they feel like all of the parts are balanced enough as is sequencing and they don't need to bounce down the audio files, each MIDI track as an audio file. And so they're saving the step of having to go through mixing each audio file into its own project and its own individual audio tracks. And instead, they just take the actual sequence that they were working on with the film and they just bounce it down accordingly. And then they do the two track that way. Now, a lot of times what I'll do is a lot of times I'll just maybe bounce down when I'm working on a cue. I'll bounce it down that way. I might not necessarily bounce it down as an audio file. If I know I have the arrangement the way I want for that particular scene, I could just bounce down the cue as is from the MIDI sequence, and the director will get a perfect, pretty much an accurate understanding of what it's going to sound like. And normally, whenever this is another important thing that I do as well. Whenever I work on a cue and I work on a piece of music for a scene, I will normally just send them an MP3 version of that, because there's no reason for me to be sending them, like, you know, an MP3 is going to be a smaller file size, and an MP3 is more than good enough quality for them to hear exactly what I compose, what original piece of music I composed for that scene. I don't have to send them a WAV file for that. Now, of course, when we've agreed that all of the scenes are done and all of the music that I've composed is approved for the entire film, then of course the final audio file that I send them for the final dub is going to be a 24-bit 48 kilohertz WAV file, because MP3 audio is not master quality. WAV files are uncompressed and they are master quality. MP3s are compressed audio files and they're not master quality, but they sound good enough to give for each particular cue that's scored for the director to get a perfect idea of, you know, what you came up with originally. So, that's something you'll get used to, you know, that you'll work on. Certainly. That's another point. And then of course, use the other suggestion that I mentioned before about organization. Make certain that all of the files that you've bounced down, you've labeled them properly and you have them all saved in the same location so that you can easily find them whenever you need to. I guess the last thing I would say too, to piggyback off of this last topic of mixing and bouncing down, is save everything you're working on. Save all of your ideas. Even if it's something that the director said, I won't go with that, let's try something else. Just in case, save it. Because you never know when they may just go back and listen to something you gave them and say, you know what, that wasn't so bad after all. You know what, can you send me that cue you wrote, you know, like a week ago for that third scene again? I think I like that after all. And then, you know, you're thinking to yourself, oh man, well, you told me you didn't want to use that, so I just deleted it. And so now you can't give them what now they're changing their mind that they want to try and use, you know. And I mean, they'll ask you, you know, do you still have it, because they figure you may have deleted it. But I'll say, just to save yourself and just to look like you've saved a day, don't delete anything. Don't delete anything that you've worked on. until you are absolutely certain that all music has been approved for that project and all music that you've turned in is going to be used and there's nothing else required of you. Don't delete anything. Keep it all there. Even if they say they're not going to use it, don't delete it. Keep it. Once you've delivered the soundtrack, once you've delivered the final soundtrack, the final score, and it's locked to the film and it's put in for the final cut, then you can delete it. But until then, keep everything. Just leave it there because you never know. That's happened once or twice. It's not something that happens all the time, but it does happen where, you know, the director or somebody might get some inspiration and they go back and listen to something again. And they're rethinking what they might have told you that doesn't work. And they're looking at it in a different perspective. And they say, you know what? It does work. It might not work for that scene, but you know, this scene that just came up all of a sudden, I think what you did back there that didn't work for scene two is perfect for scene 12. Well, if you erased it because you just thought they said they didn't want to use it for scene two, now you don't have anything to give them for scene 12 because you jumped the gun and just deleted it prematurely. Just save it. Do yourself a favor and just save it. And keep it in with everything else and just label it accordingly. You know, when you bounce down an audio file, if there are any revisions, bounce it down with the same name. But at the end of it, just put something to let you know that it's a different version. Like you could just put the number one or the number two or the number three or say something like revision one or whatever you want to use. Just, you know, have them all together. And that's something that you're going to be doing out of habit from every project from now until the next one. So hopefully all of these particular points, all of these particular suggestions that I've given to you will help you today and forever for whatever you work on as a, you know, first time composer or, you know, whatever your intentions are. What I wanted to try to do is just kind of share with you some of the practices that I've done over and over for years that have certainly helped me and they've become habit forming, but it's something that I know I do all the time and it works for me 100%. Tried and true. I've done it. I've been there. I've used it and it works in spades and it helps me to just make, you know, my job as a composer and composing and coming up with new music for a project, it just makes it go that much faster, that much easier, and it puts less, of a burden and stress on me of what I need to look out for. So, yeah, I would just say, look over all these different things. Keep in mind what I'm saying to you because it will certainly help you. And again, I just want to thank you for sharing your time with me so that I can share my time with you personally right now as you're listening to this. And, hopefully this can certainly help you, especially if, you know, you're a first time composer that, you know, has been brought into a project. And of course I'll say to you, congratulations on your first film. You got to start somewhere. You got to start somewhere. And the fact that you took this step to start into the unknown, not knowing what to expect, hey, that's what you have to do. We all were there. We're all there. But that's how you learn. You know, and you may be having some questions in your mind. Can I do it? Am I going to be able to get through it? You know, will I be able to do this? And will it work out? Hey, man, you just got to do it. Just do it. Believe me, it'll work out. It'll work out. You know. Be confident in yourself. Don't beat up yourself. Don't have too much self-doubt. Just jump into it and do it, and it'll work out for you. But, look at some of these suggestions that I have for you for the topics in this particular episode, and it will certainly make your life easier going through all of these suggestions that I gave you using a template, you know, getting your sample library together. Thinking about and making certain that your project is synced up to the correct frame rate and bit sample rate, you know, properly labeling your files and organizing all of your files that you have worked on, you know, balancing the melodies, thematic balance with your full score, using different options to find inspiration for coming up with new music, making certain that you save everything often and back up everything that you work on. And then, you know, looking into, you know, a certain mindset for mixing it and bouncing your score. So thank you again for listening to episode number 2 of the Spotting Session. Again, I'm Dana Solomon. Thank you for your time. If you have any questions, comments, or anything that you'd like to say to me pertaining to this podcast that you'd like me to address further, feel free to email me at the Spotting Sessions email address, which is podcast@dosprd.com. Again, that's podcast@dasprd.com. podcast@dosprd.com. You can find the Spotting Session on all of the major podcasting directories, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and of course, my website is at the same address that the podcast is attached to, the same domain, which is www.dasprd.com. www.dasprd.com. That's my own personal website. Feel free to give me some type of contact if I can help you out with any of your projects, give you any answers, help you, consult with you about certain options, and see how I can help you out with your project as a composer and an audio expert. Thanks for your time, and have a good day.